Lake Mendota in Madison has been called one of the most studied lakes in the world, and it turns out you can learn a lot from the dark brown muck at the bottom of it. UW-Madison researchers recently looked at some of the newest lake sediment samples and what they can tell us about water quality and how to manage it. Jake Walsh is a postdoctoral research fellow with the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center at the University of Minnesota. He led the project as a postdoctoral researcher with UW-Madison's Center for Limnology. He recently wrote about it for WisContext in a piece titled "A Twist in the Tale Told by Muck at the Bottom of Lake Mendota." Jake, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, tell us about what we can learn by doing these samples, these core samples, in effect, of sediment at the bottom of a lake.
Yeah, so it really starts with the challenge of monitoring lakes. Like you said, Lake Mendota is one of the most well-studied lakes in the world. But even there, we can't be sampling it all the time. We sampled it something like 15 times per year since the late 1970s. But that still leaves something like 350 unsampled days. And so, not to mention the days that that weren't sampled before we started routinely monitoring the lake. And so lake sediments can actually help us complement those long-term data sets that we collect at the Center for Limnology. So we can see some of those changes and, like you said, better understand how to manage water quality in the lake. and so we ended up... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we ended up coring Lake Mendota back in 2015, and we ended up pulling 4 feet of sediment from the core, which corresponded to something like 200 years of long-term ecological change in the lake. And so we were really excited to dig into what that might mean for managing water quality.
And yeah, talk about how that lake bottom builds up over the years, because from our perspective, well, A, we can't see the bottom, but it seems like it's one thing unchanging. But in fact, as you say, over a couple hundred years, I guess layers are settling on top of each other over time.
Absolutely. And so Lake Mendota is a particularly productive lake. So there's a lot of algae in there. It's living and dying. And as it dies, it settles to the bottom of the lake and decays along with any other materials that aren't used in the lake. And so those layers of dead algae and other materials build up over time. And they leave this archive that we can actually dig into and use it to understand what was going on in the lake, say, 200 years ago.
And I would think, oh, okay, you're going to do this sample, and it's going to take this really sophisticated study, and it does. But also, you write, you can look, and you can see the difference, kind of a before and after picture, before European settlement and after. How does that play out in these samples you're pulling up?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So our study was largely on looking at the chemical composition of the core, but this was something that we could see plainly the second we pulled the core out of the water. So we have a clear plastic coring tube, and you can see in the really deep, old sediments, they tend to be much lighter, and that they're rich in calcite from the surrounding limestone in the watershed of Lake Mendota. But then as you move up in the core, you see this very abrupt transition into much darker material, much muckier, or at least what we would traditionally think of as muck. And that's really rich in organic matter from that decaying algae. And so what we found is that transition corresponds to the European settlement of Madison and population growth and growth in agriculture that came along with that. And so with more agriculture and with more human activity came more nutrient runoff into the lake, which fertilized algae blooms, which is why we see that dark color from dead and decaying algae with that transition.
And there's a more recent band at the top of your sample that's starting maybe to look a little like the old days again?
Yeah, so that was actually one of the things that I found most exciting about this work is that as you move up into the core, into the more recently laid bands and layers, you start to see the core lighten up again. And we found this actually corresponded to the 1970s and 80s, which is right when Madison really started to buckle down on managing water quality in the lake. As a response to the Clean Water Act. And so a lot of ways, this is a really cool indicator that maybe the lake's starting to respond, which is something that we've been able to show in some of our long-term monitoring data, but seeing it reflected in the sediment is actually pretty powerful.
Before we dig into the nutrients and the algae a bit, I want to step back a little. Now, Lake Mendota, this is a lake in Madison. It's studied a lot. Do we learn lessons from this one lake that people are applying to lakes elsewhere in the state, the country, the world?
Absolutely. So Lake Mendota is known globally. It's one of the iconic research sites that we use in the field of limnology, the study of inland waters. But also it's representative of a lot of the lakes that we see in south central Wisconsin that are sort of subject to this nutrient runoff from agriculture, but also nested in these limestone watersheds. So they share a lot of qualities, and we can use what we learn in Mendota, hopefully to manage more lakes in Wisconsin as well.
Talking to limnology researcher Jake Walsh about a piece he wrote on WisContext about research on Lake Mendota in Madison using core samples to study the history of the lake, how runoff and other kinds of pollution affect the lake. Jake, you introduced me to a new concept, or new to me, I should say, in your piece, whitening, and the interaction between the algae and these this mineral, the calcites, I think it was. Can you give us the Cliff's Notes version of how that works?
Absolutely. So one thing that we saw in the very surface layers of these cores are these thin white bands, and we found that they're made primarily of calcite, and these calcite crystals are actually formed after algae blooms. So algae takes up huge amounts of CO2 from the water when it blooms, which changes the water chemistry, allowing these calcite crystals to form. And so they're indicative of a couple things going on in the lake. And the first thing is that calcite crystals don't actually form if there's too much phosphorus in the water. So phosphorus is a nutrient that fertilizes algae, but it can also suppress the formation of these crystals. So these whiting bands might actually be an indicator that phosphorus levels are down from where they were historically. And the second thing is that calcite crystals themselves can actually be a control on water quality in the lake. Calcite can bind to phosphorus, and then when it sinks to the bottom of the lake, because these crystals are dense, it can actually bury that phosphorus in the bottom of the lake and prevent it from otherwise fertilizing an algae bloom. And so one really key research area that we're excited about at the Center for Limnology is thinking about how is phosphorus buried in the lake, because that could help us improve water quality sort of at the margins as we're trying to tackle this really key challenge of reducing the agricultural runoff into the lake.
Now, check me on this to make sure I have this right, Jake. It sounds like in a way the lake has almost a self-regulating system even after a big algae bloom, but we kind of shut that system down if we let too much phosphorus run in. Do I have that right?
Absolutely, yeah. So we call it a negative feedback, but you're right, it's self-regulating, but it doesn't work if there's too many nutrients. And we think that's why we didn't see whiting bands from European settlement up until the late 70s in our sediment core.
Now, you mentioned farm runoff, agricultural runoff being one source of phosphorus and other nutrients. Have there been other things over the years, decades, I guess, that have contributed to that too?
Yeah, so present day, agricultural runoff contributes something like 70% of the phosphorus load. So that's why it's the primary focus of really trying to manage nutrients in the lake. But historically, we had a lot more sources from sort of urban Madison, either from human sewage or from fertilizer on the land that fertilized these algae blooms before the Clean Water Act. And so what the Clean Water Act really helped us do was divert some of those direct inputs like sewage or even fertilizer on our lawns so that we can reduce that phosphorus. And so what remained after the Clean Water Act is trying to tie up the phosphorus that we apply to our farm fields with manure.
But even a partial fix from the Clean Water Act, coming back to those samples, apparently made a visible difference in the sediment of the lake, right?
It did, yeah.
So what are you watching for next? We've got these regular samples, these core samples. What do you want to know that we don't know yet about how water quality changes over the years?
So one thing that we are excited about and looking forward to is learning about how phosphorus is buried in Lake Mendota and how calcite can play a role in that. We really just sort of can point at that with our sediment core, but we have some work to do in terms of understanding how much phosphorus could be buried in that pathway or what other factors might lead to phosphorus burial in the lake. And so, like I mentioned before, I think it could be a useful area as we keep running into issues with managing nutrient runoff from farms, particularly with climate change bringing more extreme rain events that has made that agricultural runoff issue much more challenging.
Jake, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great. Thanks for having me.
That's Jake Walsh, postdoctoral research fellow with the Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center at the University of Minnesota. He's done work, the work we talked about just now, with UW-Madison's Center for Limnology. He was with us today to talk about core samples from the bottom of Madison's Lake Mendota, arguably the most studied lake in the world, and what those samples tell us about water quality. You can read more about his story online at wiscontext.org.